In 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 13, the Apostle Paul writes, "But ye brethren, be not weary in well-doing." And what we were doing last time is we were looking at some of the reasons and causes for weariness, so that we might understand what causes it, and then we might be better able to deal with it and overcome it. And we said last time that one cause of our weariness is a seeming lack of success or importance. It doesn't seem like we are accomplishing anything. What we do seems to have no importance or contribute significantly to anything, and so we think, what's the use? Why carry on? The next one I want to look at today somewhat is closely related to this, is a lack of recognition or appreciation by others. In other words, nobody pats me on the back and tells me what a good job I'm doing. Now, why would that be a cause of weariness? Well, I'll say this. The reason it makes us weary is the need for that is a part of our selfish, sinful pride. In other words, we feel like we need somebody to tell us how good we are, how special we are, how much what we're doing matters, and they give us a little appreciation along the way, some applause and praise. Now, what is that really? Why do we feel the need for that? Well, John chapter 12, we find that this is a characteristic of those who don't know God. And it's a hindrance to having faith in God and following God. In verse 42 of John 12, it says, "Nevertheless, among the chief rulers also, many believed on him," on Jesus, "but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue." They didn't want to lose their place in society, their acceptance with their peers. They wanted to be recognized as a part of the group and not be put away from the things that they knew, their old associations and practices. Why? "For they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God." In other words, they'll do whatever they need to do to get people to tell them how great they are and what a good job they're doing, whether it's pleasing to God or not. Romans 2 says, this is not a characteristic of a godly Christian. Now, the Jews claimed to be serving God and doing His will, and they thought, you know, that they were pleasing to Him. Jew means praised of God. But he says in verse 28, "But for he is not a Jew which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh." Now, the things men recognize and approve of and praise you for are not the things of God, but the things of the flesh. And we don't want to be doing those things to gain men's approval or their applause or acceptance. He says, "But he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God." Now, the true Jew seeks not to be praised by men, but by God, to find God's approval and acceptance. You know, like it says, it's not he who man commends is commended, but whom God commends. And usually the basis of men's judgment and praise is carnal considerations man-made doctrines and commandments, human methods of salvation, and things of that nature. If you stick to the gospel, you will not find people praising you for it. Just the opposite. See, we have to be so God-oriented that all we're looking for is His acceptance, His favor, His approval, and not even considering or worrying about what men say. You know, like it says, "The Lord's my helper, I will not fear what man shall do unto me, or care what man shall say about me." Ephesians chapter 6. See, you really have to be crucified to the flesh and to the world to be able to push through all of man's rejection and ridicule and criticism and whatnot, and just do what God tells you to do and not let that deter you from God's will. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 6, it says, "We're to serve Christ how? Not with eye service as men pleasers." Not looking to see that man likes what we're... Now, if we're really serving Christ, we're going to do the best we can, and it should be pleasing to those we work for or serve. But it says that's not our highest goal or motivation. We're not to be serving with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ. Remember, if I still please men, I'm not the servant of Christ. But if I serve Christ, then I will also seek to do what's best for men, not in what they consider the best for them, but what God says is best for them, which often puts us at odds with men because they have a different opinion of what that is, just the opposite of what God says. It says we're to do the will of God from the heart, with good will, doing service as to the Lord and not to men. I'm not worried about what men say or what they like or don't like. I have to do God's will and please Him and seek His approval. Knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. I'm not looking to be pat on the back, rewarded by men, but I look forward to having God say that He is pleased and His reward, which is more often received in eternity than in this world. Now, if you turn to Matthew chapter 6, you find that Jesus spoke against this motivation or attitude of seeking man's recognition and appreciation. He says in verse 1, "Take heed that you do not your alms before men to be seen of them." In other words, don't do it in a public display because you want others to see what you're doing and to recognize it and to praise it. "Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men." All right, hypocrites seek the glory of men, and they do what they do to be seen of men and to receive the applause of men. "Verily I say unto you, they have their reward." That's all they're ever going to get. God's not going to give them any reward for that. As a matter of fact, praise is much more dangerous to a Christian than criticism or reproach. Look at Luke chapter 6. Praise tends to puff us up. And if we like it too much, we're going to look for it and try to get more of it. And usually at the expense of doing what God tells us to do. Because men are not going to praise us for doing God's will. They praise us for doing what they want us to do, which is often contrary to what God says. Luke chapter 6, verse 22, Jesus said, "Blessed, happy are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company and shall reproach you," all right, "speak evil of you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake." All right, there, you're blessed when that happens. "Now great is your reward in heaven." But what's he say in verse 23? "Rejoice ye in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. All right, rejoice, leap for joy, and look forward to the reward that God will bestow on you in eternity. When they reproach you. But look at verse 26. Woe, misery, sorrow, calamity unto you, when all men shall speak well of you. For so did their fathers to the false prophets. Now, if we're really doing the work of God and the will of God, and people are praising us for it, we need to start thinking, uh-oh, what's wrong here? Have I let down? Have I cooled off? Have I gotten away from what God says? Why are they praising me like this? And when we are being reproached and criticized and ridiculed and attacked, that's often like an encouragement and a spur. I must be doing the right thing. The world doesn't like it. And so again, don't be weary because of lack of recognition or appreciation. And that another one that goes right along with that is misunderstanding, criticism, hostility, and opposition from others often make us weary. It's hard to be always the target of people's attacks, the brunt of their jokes. It's hard to swim upstream and go against the tide, to have everything set against you, and you have to push through that in order to keep going in what God has called you to do. Look at the life of Jesus. He was opposed on every hand constantly without let up. And as he did the will of God and the work which the Father sent him to do, he was attacked relentlessly. Look at Ezra chapter 4 with me. Ezra chapter 4. Here they are building the temple of Jerusalem. And what happens? Verse 4. Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building. All right, they opposed them and did everything they could to hinder them, and this weakened them. It's hard enough to labor, even when we're unopposed, and we don't have obstacles in our path. But when those things are added into the situation, then we become weak. It's hard to go against all these kind of oppositions. Nehemiah, building the wall of Jerusalem. Chapter 6. They also were opposed. It said in verse 9, "For they all made us afraid, saying, Their hand shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done." Or we become weak and weary so that we cannot accomplish the work God has given us to do. And so he prays against it. "Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." I need strength. In Ecclesiastes, in chapter 7, it says in verse 7, "Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad." In other words, as we are pressed down by opposition and by our enemies, and as they seek to crush us and keep us from accomplishing our work, it can become very difficult. It says oppression continued can drive even a wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. Or that's the other way. They try to not only attack us, but sometimes they try to instead use things that they think will divert us in the way of flattery and influence that's bad. In other words, they give a gift and so that we will become more willing to give in to their influence. There's not only outward attacks, but there are such things as bribes that many times divert us. And so, again, oppression is very difficult. Psalm 125 refers to it in verse 3. It says there, "For the rod of the wicked..." Now, a rod is an instrument that's used for attacking and harming. It's a weapon. "The rod of the wicked shall not rest upon the lot of the righteous, or be allowed to continue to be brought against them, lest the righteous put forth their hands unto iniquity." In other words, after being opposed and attacked and harmed even by our enemies, we often let down our guard and we are more easily upset, and even to the point where we may take up physical means to try to put them off from us. In other words, what happens is we, instead of fighting in spiritual war, we take up the weapons of the flesh, carnal weapons, physical means to try to get out from under the attacks of our enemies. And he says, this is something we shouldn't do. 1 Peter 4 says the same thing. In other words, oppression and opposition can sometimes drive us to do things that are contrary to our faith, and try to deliver ourselves by means that God would not at all approve. Verse 14, he says, "If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified." And verse 16 says, "Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf." Don't be ashamed of the sufferings that we receive at the hands of the wicked. And certainly don't put forth your hands to iniquity in order to rid yourself of their opposition. All right, let's look at some more things that cause weariness. Mental labor and hard study. Ecclesiastes 12. Now, we often think of physical labor as being wearying and difficult, and it is. Just as an aside, we saw in our reading this morning in 2 Corinthians and chapter 11, Paul was talking about what was involved in his work as a minister of Christ. And in verse 23 he says, he was in labors more abundant. He had to work very hard to conduct his ministry and to be faithful to God's calling and do the work that God had given him to do. And then he says in verse 27, in weariness and painfulness. So abundant physical labor certainly makes us weary. We saw that when we talked about physical fatigue and exhaustion as a cause of weariness. But mental labor, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, and verse 12, Solomon says this, "And further, by these, my son, be admonished, of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh." Now, some of us don't have time and leisure for a heavy study, and yet, what does God call us to? He calls us to study His Word, doesn't He? Search the Scriptures, He tells us. 2 Timothy 2:15, Christians should be diligent students of the Bible. We should give it a lot of time and effort. And that's what 2 Timothy 2:15 says, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman..." In other words, we don't want to do only study and be an armchair theologian. We want to put our learning into practice and be laborers for God. "A workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." And that word study means to exert oneself, to labor, to endeavor, or to do diligence. In other words, we should be working hard to understand and know the Bible. And that can wear us down. And yet we need to keep it up. And hopefully the joys of learning God's Word and the blessings of growing in our faith will overwhelm or exceed the weariness that it involves. I found your Word and I read it. It was the joy of rejoicing in my heart. And that, of course, makes our study worthwhile. It has great reward and benefit, and it's well worth whatever time, effort, and weariness it may be involved. Another one I want to look at then is sickness, pain, sorrow, and suffering. In other words, some of the hard things we go through, and especially when they're protracted. Job expressed this in Job chapter 7. You know, if you have a 24-hour bug, that's a long 24 hours. And what about when it becomes days, weeks, months, and years? It did to Job, and it was wearing him down. He says in verse 3, "So am I made to possess months of vanity, and wearisome nights are appointed to me." In other words, day and night, he found no relief. No let up, no comfort. His terrible condition continued. "When I lie down, I say, 'When shall I arise?' And the night be gone. And I am full of tossings to and fro under the dawning of the day." Even his bed could not afford him any rest. Well, what was causing this? He said, "My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome." In other words, he was in a very serious physical state of sickness and suffering and pain. And this made his days seem very long and wearisome to him. Another reason we become weary is our own discontent. Discontentment is a very wearisome attitude. It's a sinful attitude. Notice the Jews in Numbers chapter 11. God is bringing them through the wilderness to the promised land. He's providing for their needs. He gives them manna to eat, bread from heaven. But that wasn't good enough. They weren't content with that. Verse 4 says, "And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting." They had cravings and desires for other things than what God had given them. "And the children of Israel also wept again." Instead of rejoicing at God's provision, now they're crying because of their discontent. "And they said, 'Who shall give us flesh to eat?'" Oh, now this is very wicked. He takes them out of Egypt, where they were in that terrible condition of slavery and hard labor. And what do they remember? The food they had there. "We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic." But now that God has brought them out, redeemed them with a mighty hand and bringing them to the promised land and providing for them along the way, now our soul is dried away. Oh, we are just empty. There is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. All we have is manna. We're tired of it. That's not good enough. We'd like some real meat to sink our teeth into. And so they were discontent. In other words, we're not satisfied with the lot that God has given us in life. And how can you be happy when you think, "This is not fair, this is not good enough for me. I want something else, something better." That's a very wearisome state of mind. We always think the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. "If my circumstances were only changed, I would be different. I would be happier." But what did Paul say in Philippians 4? How can we be happy and not weary with our lot in life? Well, first of all, if this is the lot God has given us, we should be very happy and very thankful because He knows what's best for us. We do not carve our own portion. God apportions our situation in this life. Philippians 4:11, Paul says, "Not that I speak in respect of want." In other words, I'm not telling you how happy I am that you provided me a financial or material assistance in my imprisonment here. I'm not saying that I am lacking anything, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. In other words, Paul is rejoicing in prison. He said, rejoicing in the Lord always, he said, and again I say rejoice. And he wasn't letting the fact that he was in such a sorry condition drag him down and make him weary with his life, because he was content in it. I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. I know how to be with nothing and I know how to have an abundance. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. In other words, to be content, happy, thankful in every state. How can you do this, Paul? Through the power of Christ. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me, or who keeps pouring His power into me. Paul, you need supernatural, divine, almighty power to be able to be content and happy in your lot. Yep, you do. We can't do it ourselves. Another thing that wearies us is God's own chastening upon us. You know, what Job was experiencing was God's chastening hand, and it was a very heavy hand. Look at the things he suffered. And yet, we have to remember that God is the one who sends our sufferings to us, and He knows what He's bringing about in our lives through those sufferings, and He knows just how long they should last and just how severe they should be and what we need to get us to where we ought to be more holy as He is holy. And so, when God's chastening is upon us, we shouldn't be weary of it. But we should be willing to see it through until God brings it to a conclusion and accomplishes His purpose in our lives. Psalm 102, verse 23. Here was the psalmist in a suffering state under God's chastening. And he says in verse 23, "He weakened my strength in the way." Or these things made me weary. I was faint. I could hardly carry on. He shortened my days. God did this. Well, what should our attitude be when God brings us into that kind of a condition? Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11. He says, "My son, despise not, or do not count it a mean thing or look down on as something of little value or importance. Despise not the chastening of the Lord," God's correction in our lives, "neither be weary of His correction." Lord, this is hard to take. This is wearing me down. I can hardly bear the load that You've placed upon me. Well, with His strength and help, we can. And so He tells us, don't be weary. Remember why He's sending it and what His purpose is. It's not an expression of His anger or rejection. It's rather an evidence of His love and care and goodness to us. "For whom the Lord loveth, He correcteth, even as a father the son in whom He delighteth." And we gain far more from God's chastenings and the sufferings they bring than we do from the good times. And notice what He says next. "Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding." In other words, He's making us wise through these things. And is that valuable? It certainly is. He says that wisdom is the principal thing. "Therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding." And God knows we need chastening to bring us the wisdom that He has for us. And so we should not allow it to make us faint or quit. Trials and tribulations tend to overwhelm us. We are weak in our flesh, and yet God of course, gives us the strength we need to get through it. Paul was going through great suffering, as we said earlier. Ephesians chapter 3, his suffering was so great and so constant that it tended to make others around him that were observing what he was going through weary. Like, wow, is that what being a Christian involves? And how can you keep going with all that happening? And do I want to get very close to him? Or do I want to have to share in what he's experiencing? And so people were being driven from him by his sufferings. And it says in verse 13 of Ephesians 3, "Wherefore I desire that ye faint not at my tribulations." In other words, his tribulations were so great that the Ephesians were in danger of fainting at just observing what he was going through. And maybe even from the things they were sharing that he had experienced as well. He says, "These are my tribulations for you, for your benefit, for your sake, which is your glory." Or these trials and tribulations are not something to discourage you and make you want to quit. They are actually your glory, and they are contributing to and adding to your glory. In other words, this light affliction that we experience in this world, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Is that something to be discouraged about or to make us want to quit, that we're having glory stored up and accumulated for us in heaven to enjoy forever after a short life of trial and tribulation? So God's chastening indeed is out of love for our good, and we'll have a great and glorious end in eternity. We gain many benefits by it from in this life, and we'll also gain great rewards from it in the life to come. And so don't be weary with these things. We'll stop there for this morning and close in prayer.